Hi, I'm Monica Hallan, and this is my podcast, Let's Talk Money. Every Friday, a new episode will drop that gives you a snapshot analysis of one money-related topic that has meaning in your life. And then I answer your money questions. My hope is to put you on the path to financial stability and freedom. So, let's talk money. Today, I'm going to answer your questions about mutual funds. You people have sent in a ton, and I'm happy to answer them. But before that, let's talk about something really important. The government has already begun the annual pre-preparation work for the annual budget, which comes in February of every year. We are many months away, but the exercise has begun. One number which is watched very closely in the entire exercise by economists, analysts, and commentators is this fiscal deficit number. It's bandied about with very serious-looking people nodding very seriously saying, fiscal deficit is a worry. What is this thing and why should we worry about it? Mostly as households, we worry about individual tax rates and prices of goods, which changes in response to government taxes and levies. But what we need to keep in mind is that, you know, it is also the deficit and how it is financed and what the deficit actually ends up doing that impacts our lives indirectly, and it impacts it in many ways. So the government runs what is called a fiscal deficit when it spends more than what it collects as revenue. So we know that government collects revenue, it has some expenditures. Simple equation, the revenue does not match up to the expenditure and it runs a deficit. There are different names of this deficit. We will just stay with what is the fiscal deficit today. Now, we know that the government gets most of its revenue from taxes, both direct taxes and indirect taxes. And it gets about 1/5 of its revenue from non-tax sources, such as dividends that public sector units pay. You must have seen newspaper reports of XYZ public sector company or insurance company or even the Reserve Bank of India has given the government some dividend. That's one of the non-tax sources of revenue for the government. Direct taxes are paid by us as individuals and by corporations, and we pay it under various heads. We pay it as income tax, as tax on house property, tax on capital gains, which is profits, and so on. Of the total budget of every year, both companies and individuals contribute about 15% each. So individuals used to contribute less, but now that number has ramped up. And on the indirect side, now it is the goods and services tax, GST, has begun to contribute 16% of the budget, with excise and customs contributing about 12%. But like I said, there is always a shortfall of the revenue over what the expenditure is, and that's called the deficit. How does this get financed? The government borrows money. So remember, every time you're investing in a public provident fund, a post office deposit, some small savings schemes, even the money that you put in the bank, a part of that ends up with the government. You are lending to the government. And the important thing is, it is in the spending of this money that the state lays out its priorities. So the government is getting revenue, there is expenditure. Now we are examining where does the government spend this money. And what you need to think about is, it's not so different from our own annual spends and what they say about our choices. Are we spending more on keeping fit or on doctor's bills? Are we spending on current consumption or on building assets which give us future income? And this leads to the kind of the deficit that the government runs. If the government is borrowing more for current consumption or is handing out freebies to the public and is not building asset, the deficit is said to have a negative impact on the economy. Think of this in your own lives as a credit card debt versus a home loan. A credit card debt is a high interest loan for funding current consumption. You're not building any asset out of that. Whereas a home loan is a lower cost loan, which actually is building you an asset. So look at the government expenses in the same way. What are they spending on? what is it that the assets that they are building will provide in the future. So we know that this shortfall has to be financed, right? So the government can borrow the money, or sometimes it also prints currency. Because fiat currency is backed by the government, sometimes they will just print money to fulfill this deficit which is there. It's called monetizing their debt when they cannot borrow more from the market. And we've seen a lot of this happen during the COVID period, where the US has printed money, India has printed some amount of money, not too much. This practice has now been frowned upon and been discontinued pre-COVID in many parts of the world. But whichever way you look at it, the problem of monetization is that it causes inflation. Finally, this excess money in the system finds its way into the market and it causes prices to rise. The other consequence of a large government borrowing program is that it crowds out private sector borrowing. Look, there's a limited resource in the country. If the government comes in and borrows a lot, the amount of resources left over for the private sector to borrow. And why do they borrow? For their factories, for their businesses, for their working capital needs. The government can exhaust the saving potential of an economy and not much is then left over for the private sector. So there are various consequences of the government borrowing too much. A large deficit also is a pointer that our tax revenues are falling short. We know that in India, individuals have found very innovative ways to evade taxes. And this impact of tax evasion is felt on all citizens, even those who don't pay tax, through this bite of inflation. For the honest taxpayer, it's a double hurt. Not only do they pull hard for those who don't pay their taxes, but they also suffer the consequences of inflation. When a government, especially before an election, spends a lot of money on farm loan waivers, on freebies, aimed at bribing people to vote for them, the impact is usually inflationary and the entire country suffers. But you know, something interesting has happened. There are two reasons now where unbridled spending by the government has actually got some limits on it. One is the Financial Responsibility and Budget Management Act, the FRBM, which puts a limit on the deficit that the government can run. There are some escape windows available which we have used as a country during COVID, but there is a certain level beyond which it is frowned upon to run deficits. And the RBI now is an inflation targeting central bank, which means that it has to maintain inflation at 4%. The band is between 2 to 6, and we have overshot the 6% limit during COVID, but the aim is to keep the deficit down and inflation at 4%. And this puts a lot of pressure on the governments to manage their money better. The good news also for Indians is that the government in the last 3 years has ramped up capital spending. 1 rupee spent on the capital account, which is to build assets, roads, ports, railways, airports, has a multiplier of 3. So 1 rupee spent has an impact of 3 rupees if it is spent on building capital assets. If it is spent on just current consumption, that money is gone. So remember that deficits are a part of a budget. A certain amount of deficit is not bad if that amount is spent really to build capital assets. It needs to be kept under control, and it matters to us as taxpayers and citizens where governments spend their money. As this budget season gears up, watch out for some of these concepts and you'll sound like a pro. Okay, May, now let's go to questions. We're talking about mutual funds today. What do you have in your bag?
We have Muku from Udupi asking if he should stick to passive funds or try out active funds as well. He's 29 years old and has been working for 3 years. He says he can take a reasonable amount of risk and he wants to invest for the long term.
Muku from Udupi, let's dive into the question of what is active and passive. And you would have guessed from the social media chatter that there are two very strong camps of active fund investors and passive fund investors. And I found that a lot of people don't even know what it means. So index funds and exchange traded funds, ETFs, are called passive funds. as against active funds. So in a passive fund, the fund manager is tracking a given index and is not making active choices on the stocks and the bonds that he buys. Whereas in an active fund, he makes these active choices and creates a portfolio with the aim of beating this index, beating this benchmark. So I want to give you an analogy. Think of an active and passive decision as either taking a taxi or taking the local mass transport, say a metro, to go to work. Your experience of the taxi ride will depend a lot on the company that you use. They might have certain safety protocols or not, the car that you choose and the driver that you get. You might reach your destination really fast, but the driver may have jumped red lights, may have taken too much risk, driven too fast, used shortcuts that you're unfamiliar with. You get there faster, but also expose yourself to the risk of a cop catching a driver and causing delay, of a risk of an accident. However, when you take the metro, you're taking a very predictable and a lower cost mode of transport. The skill of the driver does not matter, and you reach your destination in the time that it takes every day. It costs less than a cab, but may take longer to reach than the taxi. So think of this taxi analogy as the active fund manager who chooses stocks and bonds with the aim to create a portfolio which beats the benchmark. And what is my benchmark? The metro. Because at a fraction of a price of a taxi ride, I can get there. It just might take me longer. I would just get index return. So the metro is passive, the taxi is active. A passive fund on the Nifty 50 or the Sensex, it's an entry-level product. So remember that a passive fund is always against an index. The passive fund tracks an index which is created and already there in the market. So when you think of an index fund in the stock market space, you're thinking of a Nifty 50 or the Sensex as an entry-level product. You must know that there are several other indices, mid-cap index, small-cap index, you have a bank index, you'll have a PSU index. You will have tens of indices which you can buy a fund for. But an entry-level product is the broad market index. You can begin using an active fund when you understand the way you have to shortlist the schemes. If you don't know how to shortlist schemes, if you don't know the process, you're better off in a passive fund. You choose an active fund when you know that there are 37 categories in a mutual fund, across debt and equity and hybrid. And you know that you don't need all of them. And you know that you have to choose your schemes based on consistency of performance, some risk metrics and costs. If you don't understand any of this, I can only recommend that you read my book, Let's Talk Mutual Funds, which will give you a very detailed roadmap to investing in funds. And you stay with passive till you learn how to choose your active funds. And also understand that a reasonable portfolio will have a mix of both active and passive. For example, it's a good idea to do half of the equity portfolio in a passive index fund on the Nifty 50 or the Sensex, and a quarter each in a mid-cap and a quarter in the small-cap active funds. Simply because these are categories where there is a lot of extra performance left in the market. In the large-cap space, funds are finding it more and more difficult to beat the benchmark. Muku, you're saying that you can take reasonable risk. You know, it's a good idea to evaluate your risk-taking capacity when the stock market crashes or goes into the bear market. Your stomach for a loss should never be determined when markets are high, but always to be determined when markets are low. Only then are you emotionally prepared to take the risk of a market crash, which can happen at any time. Okay, remember, markets will go up and down. Over the long term, the Indian stock market has given a 12% average annual return, but that has been accompanied with huge volatility. It is only if you can understand this volatility and you can take that risk that you should enter the equity market. What is long term, you're thinking? It is not 2 years, it is not 3 years. Long term product is 7 to 10 years in the equity market. And ideally, the funds that you choose are forever funds. You plan to stay with them. You just tweak your asset allocation rather than get in, invest, and sell the whole thing. You know, I'd advise you to look at a mutual fund like a fruit bearing tree. You pluck the fruit when you need it. You aim for that time when you're able to redeem part of the portfolio, but you never uproot that tree. That means you spend a lot of time deciding on your active versus passive strategy, building your active plus passive portfolio, and then planting this fruit tree. Muku from Udupi, you should go passive till you either get a good advisor or you're able to construct the portfolio on your own.
Sheena from Dehradun asks if you can give her the right mix of funds. She's read your first book, Let's Talk Money, and understands the basics. She wants to build her own portfolio, but wants to be sure that she's on the right track.
Sheena from Dehradun, a right mix of funds is like a right mix of ingredients for a gourmet meal. In this case, we want a sustainable long-term portfolio that serves your money needs now and in the future. So that much understanding has to go into building your asset allocation. The fundamental portfolio decision is on your asset allocation. And your base level decision is between your debt and equity. Debt is that part of your portfolio which is in fixed deposits, PPF, PF, debt mutual fund, any traditional life insurance policy that you might have. And you include any equity funds, direct stocks, ULIPs, anything with an equity holding gets included in your equity part of your allocation. There are some rules of thumbs on this debt equity allocation. You decide on your equity allocation when you deduct your age from 100. So if you're 30 years old, you should be 70% in equity. At 70 years old, you are 30% in equity and 70 in debt. So 100 minus your age becomes your equity holding. Now, always remember that this is a generic rule and will change according to your unique situation. So remember, when I do thumb rules, it's more to give you a broad direction so that you know that this is what an average person does, but then you put a second rule here. The nearer is your need for money from that investment, the lower is the equity allocation. So the money that you need within 3 years, the equity allocation is zero. Okay, not a single rupee in equity. We don't know where the equity market goes in 3 years. The further away from today your need is, the higher is the allocation. Goals which are more than 10 years later, the allocation is 100%. So you use these two rules to fix your own allocation depending on when you need the money from this investment. A very crucial part about the debt portfolio is that it ensures the availability of money when you want it. So don't take too much risk on the debt side. Equity is meant to be your wealth-creating asset class. And unless you take long-term risk with equity, your money will only earn fixed deposit return and you're not making your money work hard enough. Now, within equity, you need to make a further allocation. So let's assume you're investing 100 in equity. Then 50 goes to a broad market index fund on the Sensex or the Nifty 50 or in a large cap fund. These are the lower risk equity funds. We are trying to give your equity portfolio also an asset allocation so that we are trying to manage for the risk. And 25% goes to an active mid-cap fund. And 25% goes to an active small cap fund. This 50-25-25 is a base level portfolio on your equity. So remember that mid and small cap categories are very volatile. Their prices move in cycles. They dramatically go up and down. This allocation of 50-25-25, you only make once you have the ability to choose good funds. It is okay to keep your money long-term in simply an index fund on the broad market. But, you know, you've got that age ahead of you. You might want to consider either working with a planner or choosing these funds yourself. So a good allocation is your best friend, which helps you decide on the ups and downs of the market.
Gary, a doctor from Ludhiana, asks if he has too many funds in his portfolio. He says, I'm 31 and I use mutual funds along with a stock portfolio. I have my bank manager recommending products to me and found your video where you said that you need no more than 6 to 8 funds. I look at my portfolio and I have 24 funds. Why is that wrong? And what should I be doing?
Dr. Gary from Ludhiana, 24 funds. Okay, I'm going to attempt to answer your question in medical terms. Suppose a patient comes to you with a viral infection and you need to treat both the fever and the sore throat. And now you're giving him three kinds of paracetamol just for the fever and you're leaving out the antibiotic needed for the infection. You're never going to do that, right, as a doctor? Your portfolio looks like it has three kinds of similar medicines for the same ailment. You are over-diversified. With 24 funds, your portfolio return is probably just equal to an index return. You're choosing a very high-cost and complicated way to target index return. So remember, Gary, that every mutual fund scheme has 30 to 50 stocks. Your first level of diversification is coming from this. When you buy stocks, you can buy 5 stocks, 10 stocks. You can't buy more than that, isn't it? But through one mutual fund scheme, you're already getting between 30 to 50 stocks. So that's your first level of diversification. Now remember that your equity part of your portfolio needs at most 4 to 5 categories. There are 11 categories of equity funds, 16 of debt, and 6 of hybrid. If you don't know about these categories, do a simple Google. You'll understand what these 11 categories are. You need at most 4 to 5 categories in equity. Every category needs only one scheme. So your equity portfolio needs at most 4 to 5 schemes. On the debt side, where you have 16 categories, you don't need more than 2 to 3. The debt side is far more complicated because a lot of institutional investors, companies, HNIs, super HNIs will invest through this route. But for a retail investor, you don't need more than 2 or 3 debt categories. And every category has only one scheme. We are getting at most 8 schemes in all. You need to sit with your portfolio and against every scheme, write the category name. A simple Google search will tell you which category your scheme belongs to, or you should ask your bank manager to give you these category names. Collect all the similar category schemes together and see how much you have in each category. Next, you need to shortlist the categories you want to be in. Ideally, you just keep a mix of large, mid and small cap funds. These are base level categories that you need to be in. A lot of the other categories are superfluous and are created for specific needs by specific investors. All right, as a generic category, it doesn't serve too much purpose for a portfolio. When I look at your portfolio of 24 schemes and I don't know what the category split is, I can understand that either there has been an advisor who has advised you on this or you have tried to do it yourself and the portfolio is bleeding all over the place. You will keep one scheme in every category. You will not have more than 8 categories in all over your debt and equity. You will have to sit and redeem the funds you want to exit and take the burden of paying capital gains on them. Remember, in your equity portfolio, when you are thinking of redeeming a superfluous extra scheme, you should only redeem schemes which have completed 1 year. Because equity funds go long-term at the end of 1 year and that has tax implications. We will definitely do another pod later on the tax implications of the mutual funds. But for the moment, do not redeem any equity fund if it's not completed a year. Your equity and your debt and your overall portfolio, it needs to reflect a well-diversified yet manageable plan. So Gary from Ludhiana, your portfolio needs a surgery to remove the duplication. I'm wishing you emotional stability to carry it out. It's not an easy task. And that's a wrap for today. I enjoy answering your money questions. Remember, I don't look at individual portfolios. I don't recommend products. Look upon this space as a place to ask strategy questions, doubts, and just basic things that you might not understand. Each time you have a good money outcome, I feel that I have won. To make sure that you don't miss an episode, press follow and help your friends get money smart by sharing a link with them. You can reach out to me at mailme@monicahullin.com. That's Monica with a K. Tag my social media handles @MonicaHullin. And finally, remember that you should have money and money should not have you. So let's talk money again soon. Bye. Thank you.
Let's Talk Money is hosted by Monica Halan. This is a Made in India production. Creative Director, May Mariam Thomas. Project Manager, Sean Phantom. Head of Audio Production, Karthik Kulkarni. Producer, Meghna Gulati. Sound Editor, Sarthak Ray. Artwork Design by Alika Gupta.